This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The National LGBTI Health Alliance held its 8th conference, Health Indifference 2013, Our Bodies, Our Minds, in Melbourne in April 2013. Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, is proud to partner with the Alliance to bring you this recording of the 2013 conference.
Next, we have a talk from Barry Taylor. Barry has worked in mental health promotion and suicide prevention for 25 years at the local, national and international levels. He is known especially for his lecturing, conference presentations and training work in mental health promotion, depression, men's mental health, suicide prevention, loss and grief. Barry has a long-term interest in men and mental health, spirituality and well-being, program development, implementation and evaluation, and is an advocate for evidence-based practice in the mental health promotion and suicide prevention. Please welcome Barry.
Thank you very much. It's a great honour to be here, and to start I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, but also just want to acknowledge and a big kia ora to my fellow New Zealanders. Half of them aren't here, they're busy booking caterers, got the Beninas out sewing. I've booked my wedding, I've just got to find the husband, but that's a mere detail. But yes, kia ora tātou, te whānau, welcome, haere mai. And it's great to be here at this conference. Also, what I like to do in a session like this is, however, is also to remember and to acknowledge those from our extended family of the LGBTI community who have died by suicide. And so I ask us actually just pause for a minute for a silence, and just to remember and to acknowledge those whose pain and whose suffering was no longer bearable, that they felt they no longer could be here. Thank you. Well, the talk that I've titled is From Dying to Thriving. That is, how do we reframe LGBTI mental health into a way that is useful? As it was said in the introduction, I'm passionate about evidence-based, and I'm very passionate that the work that we do is based on sound program logic and not just on good emotions, what feels good. I've seen for far too long in this field, particularly in the area of health, lots and lots of ideas that sound good, feel good, but actually have done nothing to address the health outcome that we're wanting to address. So I'm going to put a few little bombs out there today, as well as a few kind of things about saying is, what are we actually trying to achieve in this work? But the first thing I want to do is for the men in the room, if you are bored with my presentation. Now, everyone has been seeing me with this. I'm not on scruff. I just want to make sure of that. I'm not on scruff. I'm on recon, actually. No, I'm on scruff. But I want to say, at the moment, we're just up to, it's like a telethon, really. Yes, we have 772 men at the moment. 2 days ago, we launched the shout-out survey, which is a consultation for gay, bisexual, trans, and intersex men. We want to know your opinions about this partnership we're having with Beyond Blue to help Beyond Blue's campaign. This is a fantastic effort. So if you're bored, I'm going to, at the end of the presentation, I'm going to check it again. Mind you, it may not be good for my self-esteem, because if it's really gone up lots, I must have been really boring. But men, this is your opportunity. Do the survey. But let's make this viral. We've called to actions 2,000 men. I want more than that, okay? Well, I'm not saying how many men I want, but there we go. So anyway, the other thing that I think, this is an incredibly exciting time to be in the area of LGBTI mental health and suicide prevention. As I said in the, I've been in this field for 25 years, and for a lot of that time, there were very few other people in that space, in that voice. What we've had is that even in the past, there was even hostility to that. I was accused, I remember many years ago, by certain professors in New Zealand of using suicide to promote homosexuality. Well, I'm not too sure what that meant, actually, but what it showed was is that we're accused by my colleagues in suicidology that, well, really, Barry, how do you know? It's soft data. And the problem has been, of course, is that we have, in terms of research and such like, the problem has been soft data is that we have never actually asked the questions. And so, therefore, we've never known in the mainstream population mental health studies within that the field of suicidology actually what the issues are. And so, just a quick kind of overview, there was the first National Youth Suicide Prevention Strategy here in Australia, which I was on the National Advisory Board for. We funded a few little projects. Some fell over, but one, to its credit, is still going, and that is, of course, the Freedom Centre in Perth. So that's been a fantastic initiative of that. 1996, I got some organised for Gary Remifedi, who did some work on the very early work on gay and lesbian suicide in the United States from the University of Minnesota from the Adolescent Health Program, came over. We had 29 people. We invited people from all over the country to come and talk about this issue. 29 people came. Wow, look at the exciting thing. Last year we had numbers. It just shows that we are ready in this space to be talking about this in a significant way. Then we have had at time, there's been the recognition of different strategies that we are an at-risk population, but very little funding has went on. But then since in the last few years, this space has just blown. So the Mind Out funding, this is the first in the world. This is a very exciting initiative. The first in the world that under a national suicide prevention strategy, that LGBTI suicide prevention has been taken at a strategic national level. No other government has funded a national approach to it. This is very exciting space. What I'm so excited about Beyond Blue is not only that program, but the research grants. That is a significant thing, that we will start to have some sound evidence to know where we are going to be going. I just think that's amazing. What we've seen in Victoria, the $4 million under the Hay Project, New South Wales funded through the Peace of Mind, Queensland through Healthy Communities, they've been developing, they had funding there for the mental health support program. Western Australia now are taken on board, and there's been some amazing work there being done. Now in Tasmania through the action plan there, and of course the excitement of the TeleWeb initiative. So I want to now just talk a bit about this. King George V, on learning that acquaintance was a homosexual, said, "I thought fellows like that shot themselves." So one of the things that I think is really important is that there has actually been this strong association between particularly around sexuality and suicide. That in fact, both have been viewed as deviant and part of social taboo. I'm a health sociologist. And then, of course, in the sociology of deviance, which we used to call the old nuts, sluts, and perverts course, but one of the things was is that suicide was one of the areas of studies of deviances, as was homosexuality. You kind of got each of them mixed up with each other. But this notion that it was a deviant behavior, of course, for a long time, both were a criminal act. Both were abhorrent to God. And it was seen that if you were either, it was of weak or flawed character. And then, of course, both have been pathologized in terms of DSMs and that. But don't worry, after DSM-5, we're all going to be nuts, so don't worry. And of course, and according to people like Jim Wallace, that homosexuality itself is a source of self-destructive behaviour. It is actually an act of self-destruction. But of course, in a way, that was also how we were told that story, wasn't it? When you looked at the film and that the imagery, is if you were going to be gay or lesbian, let alone trans or intersex, your life was going to be miserable. And you will eventually solve that misery by killing yourself. That was what was the offer of the imagery for so many people when we offered about if this was going to be your lot. And therefore, there is a danger, of course, that it became a self-fulfilling act, that I am depressed or suicidal because I am gay, lesbian, transgendered, or intersex. That is, what happens to a psyche of a community? And this was one of the real concerns when we first started out in the National Youth Suicide Prevention Strategy. The danger, of course, is that you, when you enculturate into it, and what we have seen in, over the years is almost an acceptance and a tolerance within young people around suicide. That's almost part of the cultured lot, that's of our scripted behaviour. And so we need to be careful of that. One of the things that I also say is that, of course, as a community, very much, well before the HIV/AIDS epidemic, we have been communities of funeral goers. You talk to the older lesbians and gays and transgendered people, and we knew of many stories of many deaths of people that went to. Often we went either very secretly because you couldn't go to the funerals because the fans wanted to know why you were there. But we have known funerals and death as being part of our lot. So what happens to a psyche when that is almost like part of your lot? And yes, psychological distress, depression, anxiety are common in our experience. I'm going to do a little bit of a test here. And this is going to be a bit of self-disclosure. You're going to have to be a bit brave for this. So for instance, I'm going to ask you to put up your hand if in your lifetime you have had an experience where life was very difficult and that you would call it, whether you want to call it depression, but part of your life that you've had, you have lived with depression. Put up your hand. Now look at that. If you were to take that from a general, thank you, put it down now, but if you were to take that from a general population, you would not see that number. So when we then start to do program, we're talking about our lives. And so there's a sensitivity in that because the danger is, or the vulnerable, is we bring up our memories of what it was. We hit raw nerves when we are entering into those. So for instance, if I asked you how many of you felt that part of that anxiety or that depression was related to your sexuality or to your gender and the tensions that that brought, how many would put up their hands? It's not as many, but it's there. And what is interesting, just doing some quick analysis of the men's survey, that sexuality and gender is part of it, but also just our humanness is part of it. That is, the most common cited reason, just in the study so far, that the men are saying is about relationship breakups or breakdowns. That's important. That's what all men are saying. It is about loss and grief issues. It is about stress and distress at work. Now, when we unpack that, I think there's going to be a lot of issues about why that is, but also that we need to be careful that we don't just allot it into our experience of being around our sexuality, that all our humanness is also part of it. So, what is this thing called suicide? Well, part of suicide is about the conscious decision to end one's life. That is, to engage, when we look at from legal definitions, when I do something to cease life. And that's part of it. Now, don't confuse a conscious decision necessary with a rational decision. There are a whole lot of things that affect it, particularly around depression. The other one is drugs and alcohol. And I'm going to say here, very serious, if we are going to be serious about suicide prevention in our communities, then we must, no negotiation, we must be serious about addressing the levels of alcohol and substance use in our communities. The correlation is so strong, and unless we address it, we will not be really attending to it. So what we need to is that. But also, really, when we look at it, suicide is not about ending life. Suicide is about ending one's pain. The narratives, the stories that I constantly hear in my work is about being worn out, about being tired by life. And so that's one of the things that I think is really important. Now, I'm not going to go through. So we know that there are all these determinants that affect suicide. And that's one of the challenges in doing suicide prevention. It's not like, you know, road safety. We know that if you put on a seatbelt, you don't drink and drive, and you don't speed, we can significantly reduce the road toll. The problem is with suicide, it's this and this and this and this. So where do you begin? Feel a song coming on. But, you know, there are these notions that of that is actually, where do we do it? Now, once again, this is our stories. So I'm not going to go on about it. I'm going to explore it more in the workshop after morning tea. So there's the plug for the come to the workshop. But we know the social determinants, don't we? We know what that means. The other thing that I think is really important is so often we have got caught up in this. What's the risk factors? What creates people's risk? But just as incredibly important is our protective factors. And once again, the challenge that I think is these ones here is what is it is about connection. And the thing that I really want to say here that is incredibly important is the notion of what does connection mean in our communities? And we must move from pride to belonging to communities to feeling that I belong in my communities. One of the things, a fantastic presentation yesterday by Peter Hindle with the Gender Agenda Project yesterday. What that project does is it connected people. It made people felt that they belong. And I think there's a danger, and I'm a bit old-fashioned here, but I think there's a danger with some of this kind of postmodern. It actually does matter where we belong. It does matter about who we are and claiming our grounded space. You talk to Indigenous people. Unless you know your identity, unless you know who you are, your whakapapa, your groundedness, who you are as a person, because then when you are grounded, well, this is principles of problem-solving therapy, then you can navigate because you've got strong roots in who you are, and then you can navigate the shit that goes on around you. We need to know who I am and where do I belong. The other thing, of course, is very important is we need to move from suicide prevention is not just about stopping people killing themselves, but it's actually inviting people to live. And therefore also to imagine what not only does it mean to live, and not just in an existent point of view, but to thrive. So what does it mean for me to thrive as a human being, grounded in my identity and knowing who I am? Now, one of the things, of course, is we've had these lovely campaigns like, it gets better. And there's a truth to that. A lot of it is when we think of suicide in our community, we think of young people struggling with their sexuality, and so therefore it's kind of like we sort of say, if you just get through that, you come out, or you have your gender reassignment operation, you'll be there. But do you know what? One of the biggest groups who kill themselves are not those just coming out. It is people who are in their 40s and 50s and 60s, many who have come out for a long time. So it's not just about that it'll get better. What does it mean when we actually does get better? So what I want to do is to give some words or key points about my vision for well-being for in our community based on all my work over the years. That is, we need to help people to be confident in the art. Because when you are confident in who you are, then you don't sway. You know who you are. You grab hold of life and you walk firmly and proudly and you claim your space when you are confident. We need to be, once again, that groundedness. Who are you? Who is my rootedness so I can navigate through that? And I need to be secure in my identity. Taking on that the words of Liam yesterday, we need to move not only from that apologist kind of tolerance, but to strong affirmation and be grounded in that. We need to be celebrating of our personhood. Not as in a way that's kind of, but we need to be very strong in our sense of celebrate. And I think that's what we do really well. We celebrate at a pride level, but it needs to be taken to the next step. And this, what I think is really important, when you look at the five winning ways of well-being, one of the critical ways that's important for well-being is that we participate and that we give. We're involved in it. And so we're actively involved in contributing to the development and well-being of ourselves, those we love, and in the communities we live and share in. And one of the things I want to say is that I think, and even I'm going to have to be a bit careful here, but I think even the alliance has not been strong in, is the issue that what we have to be really clear about is also our physical well-being. We have to address smoking. We have to address obesity. We have to address those physical factors that our community is also overrepresented in. If we're not going to take a strong, holistic approach to all of our well-being, but it is about participation. It is about passion. It is about compassion. I think we really need to look at that. Come to the workshop after morning tea. I'll talk about some of these ones more then. But finally, because I'm just aware we've got zero, I'm over time now, grounded identity. We need to have voice. That is, where do I stand? When people give voice, it is the moment of voice when you give voice to our sense of who we are. It shatters silence and shame. It remembers and recalls stories, so we tell stories to connect. It's about how do we have an intentional conversations in our community about depression. One of the things that's really struck me just so much about the survey, about the shout, is the number of messages and emails I've got from men saying it is about time. It is about time as men we have started to have this conversation, and good on us for actually doing this. That's why I think they've participated. It's about legitimacy and citizenship. Because the reverse of that is marginalisation. When you're marginalised, it's easy to leave because you feel you're not legitimate to belong. And it is about political action. Voice gives us a change. Go paint a few more rainbow crossings around the place. That it's symbolic, but that is powerful. What this resurgence at the moment of political action, I think it's exciting days again. We're here. And I think we need to ask some questions. Who is actually killing themselves? What assumptions do we have about why they kill themselves? And also, what are we trying to achieve when we develop these state-based strategies? What are we actually trying to achieve in that thing? And what program work? And just once again, men, after lunch, had a bit of feed, come at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and I'm just going to give us a quick one. I was really boring because, oh my God, five of you did it over the... Well done. 777. I feel like a plane now. 777 men have done it. So 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock. And if you've loved this conference next year, of course, you're going to come to the Mind Out Symposium. Put the dates in your calendar. It is the 45th anniversary of Stonewall. So how far have we come from that? We may be pride, but where is our mental health and well-being? Thank you.
And with that, we have question time and already some eager hands up. I'll ask you to move to the microphones that you can see around the room if you have a question.
Hi, thanks. It's Michael Frommer here from the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations. Barry, thank you and everyone for your wonderful presentations. But Barry, I had a question just to follow up on your challenge to us as a community regarding facing up to drug and alcohol issues as part of dealing with anxiety, depression and suicidality. And I guess I wanted to maybe just get a better sense from you about the research, the evidence about cause and effect. And I guess I have my own kind of assumptions, but I'm interested in teasing that out a bit, if you could. Thank you.
Well, thanks for that question. I feel like Parliament now. I'd like to thank the Honourable Member. We're in the same office. One of the most critical things around suicide is the strong association with drug and alcohol use, particularly around alcohol. And I quote the Russian study. As you know, Russians like vodka. But one of the early reforming presidents did a very good classic public health intervention. He made it much harder to get vodka. He put a tax on it. And so it made it more expensive, and he also restricted access. That is, you couldn't go down to the local store and buy vodka. Within a year, the suicide rate significantly dropped in Russia. There was nothing else changed. There was nothing else in the societal factors, but the suicide rate dropped. A couple of years later, one of the new reforming presidents took the tax off, and that because it was very unpopular. And guess what happened? Within a year, the suicide rate returned to the levels that it was before. Once again, no other changes in the society. So that by that simple public health intervention, we had a significant change. John Howard's gun law reforms significantly reduced the rates of suicide in rural Australia in terms of that because of access. There are things like that that are really important. Also, we need to look at, once again, with drug and alcohol use, it is to do with the self-medicating. That is, how do you numb out pain when you're constantly in that traumatization? Also, when you look at our community, how often our communities have gathered, it has been around spaces where for alcohol use. So, and I'm not, I have my odd little shandy at night, so I'm not saying I don't have it. I'm going to have a nice sherry trifle at my reception, my wedding. But do you know what I'm saying is we need to be looking at these spaces and what happens. So, yeah.
Thanks, Barry. Please keep your clapping to thank our participants, and we have a thank you gift for those who haven't already received one.
You have been listening to a recording from the Health in Difference 2013 conference held in Melbourne in April 2013. For more information about the National LGBTI Health Alliance, head to lgbtihealth.org.au. And for more information on Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, explore joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.